Well, good evening. First, it's a very great pleasure for me to be here tonight. First, I want to thank David for this very kind introduction. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. And I want also to thank Derek and Beth, who is not here, and Marcia, who actually have found me and through which I have found this wonderful opportunity to be here at KITP talking to you tonight. And now I have to start this talk. So we decided to call it the Interplay of Art and Physics. And I'm going to remember who I am, how art and physics relate, and talk about my work and the fields on paper show. So actually, some people have never known I was in Santa Barbara for 20 years, but I was. And actually, I was here and mostly doing my work and staying in my studio. And suddenly, a few people who were part of the art community, like Hélène Levasseur and a group of students at Adult Ed, who were all working on printmaking, actually found me. And I started to show my work in Santa Barbara. Before, I was only showing outside. I was showing mostly in venues relating with actually with computers. So it was very interesting for me to open this way. And after a few shows here, I happened to become artist in residence at KITP, which in a way surprised me as much as everybody else, because certainly I'm not a physicist. And I put here a few notes to actually testify of a long-term interest on theoretical physics. Because when I was 19, I read a book which actually is on David Gross' shelves. And this was Morsan Feshbach. But fate chose otherwise, and I didn't go into physics. But I've always been very attached to astronomy and to galactic dynamics. And actually, in my first years in Santa Barbara, I got very interested in galactic dynamics models that were developed by Toomer and Toomer. And I have found, actually, my son has found in a book one sheet of some graphics which I did on a very small HP 45 many years ago. So anyway, being here, artist in residence at KITP, raised several issues that I have to resolve between the relation between art and physics so that I can actually really find out who I am and what I'm doing here. So first, we're going to talk about art and physics. Starting this investigation on the relationship of art and physics, I had to consider the Art, Image, and Science program, which KITP has actually published on their website, and decided to get into the details of this talk to help participate in the shaping of the Artist in Residence program, to help to contribute into this Art, Image, and Science program that is here, but also in a more selfish way, to find new sources of inspiration, to get closer to certain forms of truth, which physicists and artists, as David mentioned, are together looking after, and to increase the breadth and the depth of my own work. And knowing very well how I work, I see the potential for incredible improvements of what I do while I am here. So I'm very excited by the whole thing. Then when I started making searches on the web, on Google, in libraries, and discovered that the relationship of art and physics is actually a very active field, and that an incredible amount of books and courses in universities and articles on the web exist. And I will provide to KITP a list of references that we will publish so that you can actually access them. So this is how I will develop this talk: a preliminary warning, similarities and differences between art and physics, a web of interrelations between art and physics, a very short history of the interplay of art and physics, and I will just, you know, skip on milestones, because otherwise the whole history of our civilization that we will have to get through tonight in a few minutes, which is totally impossible. And actually, I thought of giving some examples, but for reasons which I will explain, I will probably skip that, because there is so much information which has been published on those subjects by people who have a deep understanding of it that I could not acquire in the few weeks that I had to prepare the talk, that I prefer not to talk too much about what I do not know, so I will send you to the right sources. And then we'll say about where we are now, and I will mention a recent controversy opened by David Hockney. So first, I must say that I'm not an historian. Critical history is not my field. I have noticed that in all those research which are published, very few seems to be published by either artists or physicists, which is also interesting. And I have only experimented slightly with what this research are concentrating on, because perspective and cubism and fourth dimension and science fiction and other things are not really part of my concern and interest. So similarities and difference, how we perceive and understand our world. Actually, we do that with our senses. But we need a path of knowledge to actually incorporate what our senses can feel. And for that, we either use our imagination or we use our intelligence. And both art and physics actually are aiming at this. And we try to find the rules of this world and in these different ways. To define art and physics is actually very difficult, and I think we all have our own definitions of that. And I will not expand too much on the subject, but I will actually do a definition which I found in the literature, which I really liked, and which was saying that children at play and artists and scientists at work actually create reality. And I think this is very important, because reality exists, it is there. Even if there was no artist and if there was no physicist, the cosmos would be there, and matter would be there, and the atmosphere and the nice color of the sunsets and the nice colors of the sea and would all be there, but there would be no conscience of it that would exist. What actually make a reality of all of that is the understanding that we can bring to it. So the perception of reality is really what actually lighten up our lives, and it's coming both from, in my view, of science and art, and they are part of our endeavor. What is interesting also is that physics and art are using a lot of common word, and physicists and artists will talk of volume, of space, of mass, of force, of light, of color, tension, etc., etc. They will study the density of things, they will look for elegance, for symmetry, for beauty, for aesthetics. So there are many, many notions in common, and it's interesting to understand why. Also, artists and physicists study space and time. They deal with illusion and reality. They deal with chaos and order. And physicists and artists can be at the avant-garde of their own fields. And also, there is the zeitgeist, which makes that certain people all at the same time study or are interested in something like cubism or strings, I guess. So there is a web of interrelations between art and physics. And first there is the art of physics, and I will let David to talk about that. And there is art by physicists. We have mentioned, you know, Einstein and Feynman were very well talented musicians, both of them. Feynman was doing drawings, he took drawing classes, and I was hoping to show a portrait of Dirac by Feynman, but then I forgot to include it in my slides. And physics by artist. An example mentioned by David was Leonardo da Vinci, but interestingly, it has been found by mathematicians and physicists looking at the work of Jackson Pollock that when he was with his brushes and cans dipping and dripping paint on canvas by just running around them and doing whatever he liked to do, he actually was able to attain patterns which had an incredible fractal dimension of almost 2. And when he was asked how he could actually be so similar to nature, he simply said, "I am nature," which was very modest of his part, but this was actually the truth. So then there is a juxtaposition of art and physics to me in all the world of art for physics, which is the art of our senses and the art of our sensors. And I found, for instance, these three images that have been brought by the Kobe satellite as very, very beautiful pieces. And they have not been conceived as art, but they are. They are by their own beauty, and they are also by the depths of information that we can expect to draw from them, and which are probably a key to reveal very, very substantial events that are part of our world. Then there is also art not for physics, but from physics, which is all the art that physicists will actually produce, either to ask for grants or to explain their results or to publish in magazines. And actually, some of this art is also very interesting. Then there is art using physics. I've tried some time to do that. Artists have been using wind, water, magnets, and I've been using nature as a driving force. I've used pendulum and gravity, and this is also what Jackson Pollock was doing when he was dripping paint. And then it's also possible to use physics laws as a guiding hand for art, and everybody who draws parabolas and trajectories and photographs, fireworks and so forth is actually confronted with nature and with its rules. Then, of course, at some point it's difficult to place a limit to what art is. Art can be in an image, but an image can also be just a piece of information that exists for itself. So between art and visualization, there is a whole realm that will really depend on personal taste and ideas and circumstances. So I will not expand into that. But here I'm giving one image which was provided to me by a member of the pattern seminar by Eshel Ben Jacob, which actually is art perceived by people, but not done by people. This is actually a colony of bacteria, and it has grown that way. And it is very interesting that it is perceived by art, because the natural growth of this colony of bacteria correspond to an image that we are really familiar with, and which is really perceived by our senses in a very positive way. Here I have something else which is coming from Eberhard Bodenschatz, and he was a research that was started here in 91 in Santa Barbara, actually in the physics department, and which shows Rayleigh structures in gases, and which creates this incredible maze of spirals which are rotating and living by themselves. And it's very interesting to me, because I have done work that really looks like that, and I did it for aesthetical reasons, and I did it mathematically, and it's about the same thing, so it's very surprising to me. And that's an example of art done by physicists, and it brings me back to Tumereux and to galactic dynamics, and it shows the interaction of to galaxies as they are being simulated on a computer. So now to come back to shortly on the history of this interplay of art and physics, it is interesting to see that across the history of our civilization, there has been parallels between the development of art and physics. The example of the classic world is well known, and the Greeks knew about light, they knew about an heliocentric solar system, and they had understood perspective, and they had, of course, wonderful art. And both art and physics seems to have developed hand in hand for several centuries in Greece. But then the Roman Empire developed over the antique world, and as it probably fostered the development of Christianity. And Christianity was no longer interested in understanding the world, because the only thing that people had to do was to believe in the Savior, and suddenly it became irrelevant to understand the world. And all of a sudden, there was a great destruction of all the civilizations, art and science that had been developed before. And the notion of time, which the Greek had developed, was actually squashed. It was discovered that time had existed only for 5,000 years, just counting generations into the Bible, and that after the day of the Last Judgment, time would stop and we would just freeze into eternity. And as a result, physics knowledge disappeared completely, and the world of art forgot about many of its colors and forgot about perspective. And the relation of people with the world was really came to a stop for a very long period. And this lasted from almost 15 centuries. Then we had the Renaissance happened. And it happened, the first sign of it happening seems to have been paintings by Giotto, who was in Italy at the very early time, and actually developed perspective in his images. And perspective had disappeared, and slowly it came back. It came back, and it was analyzed about a century later, in the 14th century, and a theory of perspective was established. Another painter, I think that Della Francesca, came in and developed a much finer understanding of colors, of light. Shadows started to appear in his paintings. And very, very quickly, art developed and produced this magnificent Italian art. At the same time, Copernic came back to the idea of a non-Ptolemaic solar system and of an heliocentric system. And Tycho Brahe and Kepler succeeded in understanding how the solar system was working, and rediscovered the notion of ellipse, which actually had disappeared from art for something like 15 centuries. And then came Newton. When Newton came, it was a complete revolution, and the classical world and the classical era developed in Europe. And it became obvious that rational thought was actually the only guide that would direct the work and the quest of scientists and of artists. It is interesting, by the way, to note that Newton, as well as being a remarkable physicist, wrote several thousand pages on subject dealing with astrology and magic systems which actually I discovered during this research, and it's something that nobody generally talks about. But what is interesting is that at that point, progress were made very rapidly, but progress in art and sciences. But near the mid of the 19th century, a crisis opened, and the crisis was going to completely transform in a matter of 50 years, at the same time, art and physics. Manet was a painter who started actually a revolt against the art habits and changed perspective and changed colors and changed subject in his work. About at the same time that in the geometry, Riemann and his predecessors started to beat against Euclidean principles that had been prevalent for many, many centuries. And at the same time as mathematicians and physicists started to have doubt on this very solid universe of reason, other artists came and decided that light was not as we thought, and the first big changes in light were brought by the concept of Cézanne, and slowly we arrive at the dawn of the 20th century, when Einstein published his work on relativity, about at the same time that artists like Braque and Picasso actually revolutionized art by totally abandoning the typical ideal of representation and broke all the rules of perspective and of time. And since that time, everything evolved very rapidly in a kind of chaos, which we can now witness, and which is happening in art, and some say almost also in physics, because it seems that some of the research which are done now, for instance, in strings, I've seen that in an article in the New York Times a few days ago, seems to diverge completely out of our expectations. So I've not been making this obvious enough, but the claim is that visionary art has often been the precursor of visionary physics. And Giotto is mentioned for that, and works on light, which has happened, and research on light, which has happened from artists way before Newton addressed the subject, seems to be the reasons mentioned for that. What it seems to me today is that physics seems much better organized to actually move forward than art. And art will have a very big problem, or artists will have a very big problem to adjust to the development in physics and adjust to the development in our knowledge, because artists keep being attached to a very narrow forms, to two-dimensional canvas and paper, to three-dimensional sculptures, when physicists are now discussing spaces which have 10 or 11 dimensions. And to be able to go through the process of making this new world accessible to most of us seems to be very difficult in the absence of proper training for artists. There is no place, probably, but here, where artists can actually get close to physicists, to have the mathematics required to have the understanding in topology that will become necessary. There is nothing like that in the formation, you know, and the education of artists. And probably this is something that should be researched. Then I would like to conclude this very brief overview by mentioning a recent controversy that has been opened by David Hockney. David Hockney is a very interesting British artist. He's very interesting by his own work, and he's also very interesting because of the good feeling and the nice explanations he can provide about the work of Picasso. Actually, he has understood very well how Picasso has been working and working around the classical rules of perspective. And he's doing it himself. And he's really, when you see his work, he has always exploded the notions of time and the notions of space. And recently, he has made a shock by finding out that most great art in the past had been actually developed using camera obscura. Camera obscura was a tool developed by artists at the time of the Renaissance, by Durer and many others, which was allowing them to project on a canvas or on a piece of glass the views that they had, and they were developing that to actually understand and practice perspective. And at some point now, a case is being made that almost all artists have been using camera obscura, and all the ones that were supposed to be very insightful and very talented and had a perfect control of their vision and of their workmanship were actually working like a photographer. I cannot believe that this was true personally. And I have used camera obscura and what is called also camera lucida. And there is such a long way between being able to do a nice piece of art and having an outline projected on a surface that it seems to me impossible to believe that this is true. But what is interesting is not what I think about it. What is interesting is that there is a huge discussion that happened in the art world on this controversy. And one of the targets of the controversy is actually Vermeer. And there has been a book and there are shows in museums which try to study this area. And the controversy is that, is it art if technology is being included, if artist is using technology? And of course, what is interesting is that the controversy starting by David Hockney. David Hockney is known to actually work to produce his art with fax machines, for instance, and he thinks it's a very valuable way of producing art. And now a lot of writers seems to decide that it's totally okay for artists to use whatever they want, including technology, including camera obscura or lucida. And my own conclusion is also it's totally valid to use computers. So this is a little plug for the end of this